You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up for decades, public radio listeners have heard political junkie Ken Rudin's take on politics and elections. He joins us to talk about this year's wild election cycle.
First, once upon a time in the job world, we got a job, started at the bottom, worked there for a long time, advanced maybe in pay and responsibility, and retired from that company 30-some years later. That was the ideal anyway, even if it didn't always pan out exactly that way.
But things have changed a lot, and they keep changing. New companies and technologies disrupt old workplaces, and it's becoming more and more common to have a series of jobs, maybe in very different lines of work, instead of one stable career.
In her new book, our next guest tries to help us understand the new look of our careers, figure out where we fit in, and how to navigate the ever-changing landscape. Farai Chidea joins us now. She's a journalist and political analyst. Her new book is The Episodic Career, How to Thrive at Work in the Age of Disruption. Farai, thanks a lot for joining us again.
I'm really thrilled. Thank you.
Well, we hear that the job world is different than it was, say, 30 or 40 years ago. You're saying in your book it's really different than 10 or 5 years ago, and it's going to keep changing. Can you paint the new reality of the way our careers work now?
Absolutely. Well, first thing you have to know is that the average length of time at a job is 4.4 years and dropping. So that gold watch, first of all, less of us are wearing watches, what with our phones and all, but it's probably good because the gold watch is not a reality for most people. And while there are some people who love switching jobs often, a lot of it is volatility, and there's two causes. One is the globalization of the economy, and the other one is basically disruptive innovation. A lot of it is automation coming from the technology side or things like Uber undermining the fortunes of cab drivers and also then providing jobs for other people. So it's not a question of whether all of the changes are bad. They're not, but they're disruptive, not just to corporations, but to individuals. So it's kind of a time to really assess how you can be flexible and adaptable.
Is it possible to have a long-term career plan, or are we just making one short-term decision after another now?
I think it's possible to make a long-term career plan, even in volatile industries, but I'll give two different models. One is that, there are industries where you may have a traditional linear career. So maybe you're someone who works in a specific type of science and you know that if you have a certain type of qualification, it looks like a long runway. I still think people can't get too comfortable. But basically what I argue for in the book is that everyone has to be in a state of psychological self-employment. And what I mean by that is that you always have to think about, do I have the skills I need to survive in the workforce? What's going on locally with my local economy? Are things going up or down or sideways? How can I be out in front of change, meaning if your company has not taken a certain step, but you see it happening in the industry, you might want to get qualified in a new program, or you might want to brush up on things that are coming down the pike, because then you're the most valuable person in the office, and you can be the one who explains things to everyone else.
A lot of what you talk about in the book is figuring out what the right job is for us now. And it's not just necessarily the dream job or the big money. And you share a lot of stories in the book. And in this case, your own personal story, you had a dream job with this radio outfit called, I think it was NPR. I think I'm familiar with that. And it was a great job. And it was, at the same time, horrible for you. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am someone who more than ever is concerned with work-life synergy. I don't think that there's such a thing as balance, but as I've gotten older and I'm also in the process of adopting a child, I have to think first and foremost about what it is to lead a good life. And so I loved my job at NPR, but it was sometimes on a really funky schedule, having to get up at 4 a.m. or earlier to be in the office. And my body was not good with that. It was one of these things where I really had an appreciable decline in my fitness and health, and I put on a lot of weight. And that may all sound trivial, but the reality is most jobs have the potential to take time off of your life. There have been a number of studies that look at both white-collar work and blue-collar work by race and gender and how they affect us. And every type of work has many potential benefits, but also potential downfalls. Shift work has certain perils. Overwork, you know, working more than 60 hours a week has other perils. There are many different ways in which, first of all, you know, even white-collar work can burn us out. But also, everyone's different. You know, the issues I had with sleep may not be the same for someone else. You know, so you have to really be aware, not just of whether you're on a promising career track, son or daughter, but also, is this really right for your body? Is this right for your mind? Is it right for your financial health? These are all different questions that we have to ask ourselves.
Talking to Farai Chidea about her new book, The Episodic Career, How to Thrive at Work in the Age of Disruption. A big portion of your book, Farai, is devoted to assessing ourselves and how we approach our job world and the job we want now, or whether we're leaving a job looking for a new one. You break down a number of personality types. So what's the starting point? How do we figure out who we are as workers and what's going to make us, if not happy, at least fit with our lives as a worker?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, first of all, I mean, I've been so gratified by people who've read this book and are like, okay, this lit a fire under my butt, or, you know, this is my new Bible. I never thought I'd write a career book. It's just not really what I do, but I saw so many upheavals that I felt I had to do it, and I also felt I had to be practical. So I developed a self-diagnostic tool called the Work-Life Matrix that asks four simple questions, including whether you're a risk-taker at work and whether you like making decisions in a team or alone. And I ran a bunch of surveys and then did follow-up interviews. And I'm really gratified that the Harvard Business Review is actually going to do an online version of this test, which is, you know, is something that makes me extremely happy, but hopefully will also help other people. Because what I saw as I spent years reporting this book were certain archetypes of individuals who had certain behavior patterns, and I wanted to find a way to drill down on that. And among the research that I got out of doing this, I found things like risk takers, not surprisingly, were more likely to be entrepreneurs, but also that people who did high social impact work, which is sometimes described as purpose-driven work or, you know, socially positive work, were less happy than people who worked for money. And so once I got a bunch of data on that, I started saying, well, why is that the case? And one of the things I found, which resonated with my own life, by the way, is that it makes sense if you think about it this way. If you set a goal of making $100,000 a year, you know when you've reached your goal. But if you set a goal of making sure all kids have an excellent education or cleaning up water pollution or stopping climate change, you know, you're probably never going to reach the finish line. So one of the things I do in this book is provide people with ways to think about not only the workplace, but their own thought patterns. So if you are someone who is doing the hard social impact work and you find yourself constantly frustrated, realize that that's probably a part of social impact work. And it doesn't mean stop doing it. It just means maybe be a little kinder to yourself.
Well, it sounds like you're saying we need to, in this job world, recalibrate maybe how we measure success, especially when we're doing those things that the success is more of an intangible than X amount of dollars or the corner office.
Yeah, and really what the four questions lead to 16 archetypes. I provide one real-life story from someone I interviewed for each of the archetypes, and then a list of careers that are likely to track with that archetype and other information like that. But I think that every archetype, and certainly every individual, has different things that they bring to the table. So, for example, if you're someone who's cautious about switching jobs or careers, you could find yourself like the frog in the slowly boiling water. Like, you're like, well, I think things are getting a little sketchy around here, but I want to stay. And you just stay at a place so long that eventually there's massive layoffs or the entire enterprise fails. And there are different perils for risk takers. And so it's really just about understanding how your inherent sensibilities fit into the workplace, as well as, of course, you know, also being kinder to yourself and recalibrating how you think about work.
And Farai, for all these different archetypes, you point toward one really portable quality that for people who lose a job or move from one job to another, it's always going to help them, and that's resilience. Is
Absolutely.
Resilience something, though, that some of us have and some of us don't, or is it something that we can cultivate in ourselves?
you can absolutely cultivate resilience. And so resilience, in essence, is just the pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start all over again spirit. And that's a very kind of, a sparkly little summary that we're all familiar with. But true resilience is that kind of deep inner grit where people have started companies and they failed, but they can start a new one. Or a couple of the people in the book are people with criminal histories who had to reenter the world of legal employment after having been incarcerated, which is another big challenge. So whether you're, a CEO or someone who's coming out of jail, if to succeed, you're going to have that spirit of resilience, which allows you to adapt after failure and make a new plan without too much sitting around licking your wounds. And in an economy where the average job is lasting 4.4 years, that is critical, and it can be cultivated, because one of the things you can do is basically, the psychological self-employment, that attitude that I talked about, allows you to say, okay, well, I understand it's not personal that, my job at place X ended, or I understand even if it was personal, I can't control how other people behave. And so you spend less time questioning your own judgment and more time being proactive.
We're talking to Fry today about her new book, The Episodic Career, How to Thrive at Work in the Age of Disruption.
And you can join in with your questions and your experiences at 800-642-1234. Has your work life been a series of different jobs? How did you make that transition from one career path to another? And if you're looking for work, or maybe thinking about leaving your job, taking a risk, or starting a business, how are you making that decision? You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Continuing our conversation now with Farai Chidea. Her new book is called The Episodic Career, How to Thrive at Work in the Age of Disruption.
You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your career path looking like? Does it feel more like a maze than a path? Have you found a job that really does work for you? And what's important to you in a job? Is it all about the money? Is it flexibility, personal satisfaction, stress levels? Are you changing jobs? Are you about to change jobs? Do you want to? Or are you nervous about leaving a stable situation that's okay? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Farai, something that was interesting about your book, a lot of times job advice books are really individual focus, and you've got a lot of that there too, but you say it's important to consider the collective good too, and try to create a just and fair workplace. Could you talk about that some?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's any time that there's economic anxiety, you also see a lot of fractures in social cohesion. And I think that this election cycle has pretty much demonstrated it. I mean, I'm a political reporter. I work for 538.com, and so a lot of times I will see that the places with the most intense unemployment or the most intense volatility are places that are also socially stressed and politically stressed. And so there's a lot of evidence that that people resort to unethical and unfair workplace practices as well when they feel threatened. And really, there's nothing that I can say that really will change the game, but I want people to at least think about these issues. So I give a bunch of ethical scenarios about ranging from whistleblowers to gender discrimination and age discrimination, which is really quite profound. And if you are in a workplace, either as someone who's on the receiving end of discrimination or perhaps someone who is going along with a corporate culture and doling it out, you have to take a hard look at the situation. I mean, everyone has choices. Not all those choices are the same. But a lot of times in workplaces, if something's going on where there's a clear ethical dilemma, you can choose to be the go-along, get-along person and go with the corporate culture. But if the corporate culture is kind of poisonous, you have to make a choice about what you're going to do. I'm very clear in the book, however, that being someone who speaks up is not always rewarded, and that sometimes you do feel you know, very much like you can't lose this job. I'm not saying that you will then act completely out of control, but there are times where, you know, whether you are, again, on the receiving end of discrimination or someone who's standing on the sidelines, you may not feel empowered to challenge it, and you might just want to leave. For example, I'll give you a very concrete example. A friend of mine is a gay man who, you know, appears to many people to be straight. He's a jock. He's, you know, super into sports. He's very masculine. And he was working in a financial services firm where people assumed not only that he was straight, but he wanted to listen to homophobic jokes and all sorts of, you know, things like that. You don't even know who you're working with. That's something to remember. You know, if you're talking to someone white, they may be married to someone or have children who are non-white. A lot of times in an increasingly diverse society, we don't even really know the full context of the people who we're with. And for that reason alone, it's worth, if not just for ethical reasons, but also for reasons of self-preservation, it's best to assume that acting in an ethical fashion is the way to go. But I also realize that there are dilemmas when it comes to that, and I get into them very granularly in the book.
Let's bring in our callers now at 800-642-1234 as we talk to Farai Chidea about her new book, The Episodic Career, How to Thrive at Work in the Age of Disruption. Marcus is with us now in Deerfield. Marcus, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just recently got an opportunity in another state to continue my education, and I'm trying to find out what's the best way to go about getting a job in another state when I'm currently living in my home state. And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Probably a lot of people dealing with some kind of similar situation. How, if you're upping stakes and moving to a new place, how do you start your career up there?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have known more about Marcus's situation in terms of, is it feasible to split time between the two locations? Because I do think that one of the good things that has emerged from this, you know, this era of work is that there are many more employers who are willing to do flexible location or flex time so that you can work part of the week in one location and part of the week from home. So that may or may not be a possibility for Marcus. Another question is, you know, what is the transition? So let's say that it's not possible to commute. Is it a situation where Marcus can rent out his house or apartment for a limited amount of time and say, well, we're going to do a 3-month evaluation. I'm going to stay at this company for 3 months. I plan to stay here long term, but I wanted to be sure that I shouldn't sell my house, or, you know, whether or not I should sell my house. I mean, I think employers understand now that if you have long time stakes in one community, that it can be really difficult to pull up those roots unless you feel secure. So one way to go is also really to treat this as a mutual evaluation. You have to if you even raise the prospect of that, you have to couch it in very specific terms. I'm committed to this company. I'm committed to this enterprise. I'm committed to you. I just want to make sure that we're a good fit for each other. I think it's in both of our benefits. I'm coming to start work on Tuesday, but I want to have a 3-month review, and after that I will sell my home or, you know, give up my lease. So there's certain ways to raise these things that don't raise red flags, like what's your level of commitment? Because you don't want to seem like someone who's part of the way in. What you want to do is say, I'm all the way in, I just want to make sure that we're on the same page.
Farai, as we wrap up, can you make the case that things aren't necessarily all bad in this situation where we've said goodbye to the lifelong career and we're in a job-to-job hopping sort of situation?
Yeah, I think that unfortunately, the people who are both risk-averse and don't consider themselves good networkers can feel at a disadvantage. They're not necessarily at a disadvantage, but right now there's a lot of good that comes out of having the ability to reevaluate your career and taking proactive steps forward. But you have to be a strong networker and you have to keep your eye on the ball. Again, the question of psychological self-employment.
And briefly, Farai, you took a big plunge in writing a book outside of your usual issue area.
Absolutely.
You think it panned out all right?
I did. I'm really happy with it. And everyone who's read, I mean, I get a lot of great feedback, including from people who are long-term unemployed and who find it helpful, as well as people who are gainfully employed and just want to stay focused. So, you know, I feel happy about it, but it's definitely been a challenge to leave my comfort zone. And I think all of us have to leave our comfort zone. That's what the new economy is asking us to do.
Well, Farai, thanks for joining us today, and good luck in the adoption process.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and this has been a joy.
We've been talking to Farai Chadeya. She's a journalist, a political analyst, and we've been looking at her new book. It's called The Episodic Career, How to Thrive at Work in the Age of Disruption. We have a link to some information about the book over at the Central Time Facebook page, and still looking to hear from you there. Let us know if you've made a big change lately, left a job, started a business, considering leaving a job. Maybe you don't want to give that away just yet, but let us know how that change worked out for you, what you're weighing, and what's important to you in your next career choice. Again, that's at the Central Time Facebook page.